Welcome to Blightbringers, a Legion of Everblade-focused War Machine and Hordes podcast. I'm your host, Ronlore, aka Tyrone, and because I have Blight Sickness, I played Bethane this week, but I won't know how it went until next week. Ah, the vagaries of time. Joining us this week from Betterno, Czech Republic, is a special guest, Simon Battersby. Welcome to the show.
Hi, guys.
I tried.
It was a valiant effort.
Thank you.
I couldn't even attempt it, so you're good.
Right on. Simon is one of the guys we have in our War Machine Discord, hangs out on the Legion channel, and he wanted to be on the show, so we said yes, and that's awesome.
For the record, I'm also here because I didn't get an introduction this week.
I have to fix it.
No, I have to fix it. No, it's not how this works.
I'm falling over. Okay, fine.
You leave now. All of this in like a man. That's what I'm here for.
All right. Wolf's here.
True. Damn.
Oh my god, see? I didn't write it in the notes. That's the problem.
You were too focused on the R.
I know. Just awful. I didn't get any games in last week, unfortunately. Got busy with other stuff. Mostly Destiny. But how'd you do, Wolf? I know you've been to a couple tournaments recently.
So, about 15 games in. I'm not going to go over all of them because I'm not spending an entire episode talking about, you know, games. Forget that.
Yeah.
But yeah, I've reached like the 35 game limit with Animag, so having fun with her. Turns out she's pretty good into like Magnus 2. I will say that.
Okay, that's interesting.
That was a good time.
Which version of Animag were you playing into which version of Magnus?
The triple warmonger build I've been doing, two max one men, single Blightbringer. I'll post the entire list in the show notes. It was Magnus with six heavies.
Six nomads or nomad talons?
There was... I have to actually look at what these things are called now. I don't play into mercs that much. There was four nomads, I want to say. Four or five nomads. Two of the manglers?
Manglers?
That sounds right.
Okay. And which scenario do you remember?
I want to say it was the pit.
Okay. And what was the win condition?
He ended up clocking himself bottom of five... Just took a really long turn too when he was trying to get his feet off. And yeah, even without that, I think I pulled it out just because most of his jacks had five or less boxes left on them in various places. And I still had like a full unit of warmongers and a Blightbringer. So I'm pretty sure I just killed them all off and went, well, you can no longer do anything on scenario. Thank you. I win.
Do you even outthread his jacks though? Like...
No, but terrain was actually super like helpful for that, just because there was a bunch of walls and other things that like he couldn't really hit me over, but I could walk over and hit him, or like just contest scenario perpetually with a lot more dudes.
That's interesting. So, I've always considered Magnus 2 especially to be pretty tough for us.
Yeah, it was that weird scenario of like, I can run a warmonger over this wall, so you either have to like kill it to get things to move, or I just get to perpetually contest scenario like across the board.
Yeah, Magnus suffers from a lack of Pathfinder, but I certainly wouldn't look forward to playing against him, let's be like that.
Oh god, no. I was terrified the entire time.
Well, that's good. Any other games you want to go over?
Nah, that's... A lot of them were fairly weird and just getting a lot of reps in. Some of these are like 3 weeks old, so...
Fair enough.
There's not a lot of stuff on here.
Yeah, okay. Simon, how'd you do for recent games this week?
I had two games into Trolls. I was playing against the Grim Angus with four huge base list.
Oh, yeah.
That sounds terrible.
Yeah, not a lot of fun. I was testing my version of Animag into it, which is with Golab, which is unusual for most people.
A little bit.
Yeah, you tend to see Golab with like Thagrosh or Fianna, not really with Animag too much.
Yeah, which I was originally massively against doing, and then have since had to eat my words, because it's pretty good. But not so much into Grimwomp. So he's not a lot of fun, and prior to that, I would accept pretty much any troll matchup happily with Animag, but that one is not great.
What is it about Grimwomp and the four huge bases list that gives you trouble?
You bet right. It's a combination of essentially he can kill Chosen The Sea King is very capable of killing Chosen and killing lots of them, and it's very difficult to layer your Chosen effectively because of his 4-inch reach. So you don't have that sort of Chosen tar pit that you can rely on because the Sea King can just smash it to pieces. And in the meantime, you eat 2 rounds of shooting pretty much every time because his feat is such a time walk that you never get in and you don't even really effectively jam. And I've run it twice. I've run the scenario twice. One where I tried to jam him and just ate a bunch of hits and then tried to hit him back. And the second one where I tried to sort of just take a round of shooting for free and then go in. Neither of them are that pleasant for us.
Right. Okay, so we've talked about Greymangus 2 weeks ago and this week, but I don't think we mentioned exactly what his feat does. You mind just going over it?
Sure. So it's speed minus 3 and no charges. So essentially threat minus 6. And for a list that's generally got a threat of 12, that brings us down to 6 inches, and that's no fun. So the only way that you can counter it, and I think you had Banks on speaking very well on mm-hmm. on the topic, but the only way that I found that you can counter it with Animag, the feat specifically, not the list, but the feat, is to have spell martyrs at exactly the right distance away. So they need to be just out of the feat, but able to run in and get the gallows, and you gallows into Hellmouth range, and then he's dead.
Okay, so he has to kind of leave his caster vulnerable, and you have to be in just the right spot to make it work.
Yeah, and he should generally tuck in behind his Sea King to make that impossible, but, you know, if they don't, then...
That sounds like a bad time, I'm not going to lie.
Not a lot of fun.
No part of that sounds good at all.
No, and then, the Hooch Hauler comes in, sets everything on fire, oil, boosted attacks, you're on fire next turn, not good.
Yikes. Any other games you want to go over, Simon?
Had a couple of games into Reshef as well. My original plan regarding WTC was to completely ignore Reshef because by all rights and manners and anything holy said that the turtles should have been nerfed. And so our plan was to simply ignore turtles because, you know, who's going to leave them in the state that they are? I mean, that would be utterly ridiculous, but then they did, so.
They would have gotten nerfed if they were a Sigmar model.
So we suddenly had to train against Resheth again, and that's also not a lot of fun for Legion.
Yeah, I guess it's the Winds of Death, just a huge gun line.
Yeah, it's the basic 2 turtles, 1 Reavers, Minslingers, so that he's got 6 Arcnodes, then Shaman and Agonizer Kraya, usual stuff.
Well, it's a good thing you're practicing for a team tournament where you can totally dodge.
except that I'm trying to dodge Sigmar as well, so it's like...
You can have multiple dodges, it's fine. Your team, yeah.
Sounds really. Like you need to put a Naga in your list, just saying.
if only Arcane Shield was my problem.
Nah, man, you just have to roll crits every time. I found out the way to beat turtles is crit Shadowbind them turn 1, and then just keep hitting that crit every single turn. You're fine.
Yep, that sounds legit. Sounds like the Nog is definitely living.
I don't think that's a reasonable plan, I'll be honest. All right, so our main topic today is actually part 2 of last week's episode for the Spawning Vessel. What we're going to get into is we're going to get into a couple more of our support models that we kind of missed last week, and then we're going to go and answer a handful of questions, and we'll see where we're at after that. So, first up on the list is the Nephilim Bloodseer. I love this guy. I put him in like every Veil list I make, and I've considered putting him in Lilith 2 because of what he brings for her, because she has Fury 5 and she has to land a debuff, which is kind of horrific. But he has telemetry, which is not bad. What do you guys think?
Every time I've ever considered putting him in the list was if I was going like ridiculously magic heavy, because then you can spread telemetry out and that's it.
Right.
Like, I don't know that he's worth it just for like one buff. Like, if you're running a throne plus a unit of ice witches plus hex hunters or something, like, yeah, no, then you maybe consider him to get everything up to like magic ability 9 and basically make hitting irrelevant. But I don't know that otherwise I even look at him for like most of my lists, to be completely honest.
Yeah, I think you're right though, but we do have a decent number of magical abilities between our solos with the sorceress, and then we've got the Black Frost Shard, we got the Ice Witches, we have the Hex Hunters who have a whole whack of shots, and especially the throne. That thing loves to be magic 9, that's for sure.
put it with Veil 2 and be effective magic ability 11.
Seems good. Nightcaster.
Yeah, I mean, he's very good with Veil 2, and that's the only place that I've ever put him. I remember when Jake made the Fianna Flying Circus list sort of popular, and in early versions of that, and maybe even some late ones, you still saw the Bloodseer for triple slipstream. If you're going to pay 14 points for an Animus, basically, which is what you're doing, then it's nice to have it twice or three times.
Fun fact, and I found this out after the fact, Jake didn't actually get the idea for the Bloodseer in there. Apparently that was Chris Orr's doing, or so he tells me.
Yeah,
so
that's what I saw on online as well, actually.
Oh, yeah. Fair enough. I don't know.
He totally got famous off Chris's idea, go Canada.
Says the American of all people.
Look, I have to deal with these guys a lot more often than I have to deal with Jake. I got to suck up to him somehow.
The Nephilim Bloodseer is also capable of casting Animi from friendly Warbeasts in his command range because he has the Primal Magic ability. He's able to cast, like we were saying, the Seraph's Animus to get an extra slipstream. He can put out a Wraithbane from the Naga. He can cast Spiny Growth on himself, which in, I was going to say Children of the Dragon, but that doesn't make much sense.
Nope, and it's non-character Animi. So you can't get healing on him. You can't get Proteus's Animus. So, I mean, it has its moments where it's useful, but I don't know that I want to pay 8 points for something to cast an Animus and do nothing else. It feels like
you happily pay 14 for a Seraph.
Look, that Seraph occasionally rolls one shot too. Like,
I think one of the more interesting Animi you can actually cast now is the Archangels, though, and I think there is some room to explore a fire-based army, and I think that's
no. No, yeah. It's absolutely dreadful.
Oh, no.
I have to agree here. I tried Volith 1 for a while, and it's a fun list, but you're not going to win anything with it.
Okay.
It's dreadful.
All right, well, maybe something in the future will help us.
Oh, I mean, it's like theoretically feels great, and then any other way, it's just like the thing is that you pay for an overcosted Archangel with random rate of fire, which we won't even get into, then you get the Animus, which gives you the extra damage on 10 inches. Cool. And the range on Archangel is 10 inches. Makes sense. Fine. However, the only thing that makes the Archangel cool is that it's the only thing, Gargossle that has reposition. And if you want to use your Animus, you can't use the reposition because it goes out. So then the only way, two ways of fixing that is one, buff it for the love of God, or two, take a Bloodseer for another 8 points, which means you're paying 45 points just to do this thing, and it's just never worth it. You can't pay 45 points for that.
Yeah. Although, I gotta say, POW 18 croaks on paper looks super scary.
It sounds fun.
You're never gonna get there. It's never gonna turn out that way, but it sounds good.
The dream.
All right, well, homework this week.
Yeah. Too early for this.
If someone makes this work, you let me know, because I want to do it.
If somebody finds a way to make this work, I will eat a hat.
An entire hat.
But somebody's hat.
All right, next up, Nephilim Protector. This guy is pretty beefy. I think he's, 10 points. He's got Guard Dog and he's got Shield Guard, both of which are pretty good support abilities. Personally, I think I fielded it once, but what about you guys? Is there any room in any list for a Nephilim Protector?
Depending on the list, I've used it a couple times. It's kind of funny with Abby, too. You run it up and then give her parry so she can fly over stuff. But that's usually like I'm ending the game here or dying move. He'd probably be worth 10 points if he had an Animus that was, worth anything. Like, I don't know, Safeguard, for example. That would be great. He'd probably be amazing. As it stands, for a Shield Guard, he's too expensive, and Guard Dog doesn't do enough to justify it. Like, if I can take 3 Shield Guards for 9 points, why am I paying an extra one for him? It doesn't make sense to me.
Yeah, I mean, he burned as soon as the Pharaoh Valkyries came out. Like, there's no reason to ever take him over them. That's not entirely true, but I've never done it.
All right, so that's too bad. I think, he's pretty interesting, but yeah, I think you might be right there. He's lackluster.
He's a cool model, and like, I've used him with like Thags 1 and Children of the Dragon.
Sure.
And like, he's actually pretty decent there because he's armed 22 standing in his own and just says, hey, come and kill me. Like, that's his job at that point, and he does it really well. But there's not a lot of places where I feel like he's gonna shine, and you're going to get value out of him at 10 points. Like, especially lacking Pathfinder, Flight. Like, he doesn't have a way to get anywhere that he might need to go. And at the end of the day, for damage output, he's still only rocking a POW 12, which, yeah, okay, it's something, but it's not anything you can realistically rely on to even try and go into another light. Like, if he had something to either make him more of a support slash late game combat beast, like, okay, sure. If he had, like, a decent animus where he could, you know, help the rest of the army out and get up there, great. But he's kind of like a middle of the road, kind of wants to do only one thing and doesn't do it great, in my opinion.
I mean, I always compare him to the Circle Light, the Wald, oh, which one is it? Is it Watcher? Wald Watcher?
I believe so.
Yeah. Yeah. That's right.
And essentially, they do everything the Protector does, but better, for less points. And obviously, you know, across faction and all that sort of stuff, but when you look at what they do in a list and you look at what the Protector does, it's not comparable. So,
all right. Next up then is the Blightbringer, who I don't know how we missed last week, but he is the epitome of support beast. He is capable of giving out a -2 defense aura and concealment for friendly models, +2 strength and armor, and he has no spells, which is also situationally brilliant. How much usage have you guys gotten out of the Blightbringer?
Well, I mean, Primal Terrors came out, and he went from being eh to being amazing. He's basically just a big Legion Creelstone, which sounds weird when you think about it, but it's kind of amazing. Situationally, you're probably going to be in a +2 strength and arm most of the time, but like Withering Ash has its moments, so does Spiritual Corruption. But he's great in that one list, and I don't know that there's a whole lot of other places you're going to take him, but he's at least useful in one list, which is more than we can say for the Archangel, so I'll take it.
Well, the Blightbringer is only really allowed in Primal Terrors and Oracles, right? And there's nothing really in Oracles that he wants to support. He could support Hexes.
You could get those POW 12 Hex Hunters, don't doubt that.
Oh, come on now. Not a good plan.
I never claimed it was a good plan, but it's definitely a plan.
What's the field allowance on Hex Hunters? Is it two units?
They're FA2, yeah.
You take double Hex Hunters, you take double Ice Witches, you get those sweet Mat 5 POW 11s. Come on! We can make it happen!
Oh, man. The Blightbringer is amazing. The Blightbringer is absolutely superb. The idea of running Primal Terrors without one breaks my heart. He provides an unbelievable amount of value, especially to models that exponentially grow with armor, which is obviously the Chosen and the Warmongers. The damage buff is very handy, especially if he's sitting right behind Hellmouth, for example. The Hellmouth suddenly goes up to strength 17. If it's on the Animag feat turn, it's 19. If you didn't have to charge, that means that the main mouth is getting both the pull hit and its own activation hit. So that's 2 POW 19s for almost nothing, and for a free model. I mean, the Blightbringer, there's just so many ways that it's amazing, it's untrue. AoE 5 gun that can just smash people's infantry lines or force them to spread out more than they want to. -2 defense and no tough. I think, I don't know whether you mentioned no tough or not, but that sometimes is pretty good.
Yeah, Banky mentioned it during his episode against Trolls, where the no tough is actually the most important part of the Blightbringer.
Yeah,
I mean, it's got a lot of utility. A little less with Animag, because her feet kind of covers that for you, and I run Golab, so even less, but yeah.
Yeah, but the amount of times, like, I've been playing Animag quite a bit, and you just look at, you know, a late turn and go, well, you can hold the feat then until turn 4 or 5 and go, hey, Blightbringer's still here. There's only 4 or 5 Warmongers left, but those 4 or 5 are going to clean up whatever happens to be in these zones, and then good luck killing them with the little bit you have left. So it's actually a weird, like, just having the Blightbringer on the list allows you to hold your feet for later. It's kind of neat.
I hadn't thought about that. Specifically, like, I hadn't considered it as a specific strat, but I mean we play quite a different version of Animax, so I suppose we have the
European
meta
is like, you guys are like 6 months ahead of the rest of us, I've been told.
I don't know, that I came from a computer gaming background, and I certainly found the European servers to be a little tougher than the American ones, but not when it comes to like sports games or fighting games. You've got us there.
Oh well, I mean I'm glad we're good at something.
All right.
I was mainly playing strategy.
Yeah.
Strategy's hard, all right?
Just well, that's why the Asians just smash us all to pieces. It's fine. we feel your pain.
All right, moving on. So that's the last of our support war beasts. We think we've covered all of it this time. So if not, well, we'll get back to it again next week.
Third time's the charm.
Yeah, well, you know.
If we miss something, I blame Cutter, mostly because he's not here to defend himself.
Makes sense.
I'm up for that.
All right, so...
Damn it, Cutter.
We touched on a couple of these questions last week, but we're going to kind of try and go a bit more in-depth into them this week. So the first one is from Jester5613, and he says, Legion seems to require more support than any of the four factions I've played, and it makes list building hard. How much is too much, and how little is too little? How much support do you guys tend to put in your lists?
So who wants to start with this one? Because I have very strong opinions.
Just before we get started, is anyone else annoyed that we don't know what these other factions are? Because it's just a part of me that wants to know.
Oh, well, we can find out.
I mean, that's a question away. We can shoot one back to him. But yeah, I don't know offhand.
If you've got strong opinions, you go right ahead.
Okay, well, first question, what other factions are you playing? Because I don't know if you've seen like a Menoth list that doesn't have a choir, or a troll list that doesn't have a Creel Stone, or literally any of these other factions that are balanced around like a support unit, and you will almost always see it in a list, because if they don't have it, they're just substantially weaker than they should be. So I don't know that we require more support than a lot of factions. I don't know that that's necessarily true. We tend to take more support just because our base stats for the most part are lower and you need them to like help out in that area. But I don't know that it's required by any stretch. So yeah, there's that just as an opening thought. But I don't know, like, how much is too much and how little is too little? That's kind of a vague question, only because it really depends on the list you're taking. So say you're taking like an Abby 2 list. She fixes Matt just fine, so you don't really need, you know, ice witches in there, or Black Frost Shard for the ice cages. She fixes speed, so you can probably get away without a Nerith, or Seraph, rather.
Whoa.
Hey, I said you can probably still have it in there, but you can probably do without it. And then you take that versus, say, I don't know, like Ryas. Like, she's almost going to be taking a Seraph, if only for, like, the personal assassination threat. She's not really helping any of her beasts or units beyond Dash, so you're probably going to want Ice Witches or Black Frost Shard or something in there to like make sure your stuff hits the things that it's supposed to hit. So to just say how much is too much support and how little is too little is really hard to answer on just a very general scale. So I don't know. That's my thoughts. What do you guys got?
Darren?
I think you're right that it's pretty vague, especially when you consider that the support in a Primal Terrors list, right? If you're taking Ganymede, your support is the Blightbringer. But he's also just a huge beast. Like, you're not really paying for him in the same way that you're paying for, like, a Forsaken or a Shepherd, right? He costs points, but he has output, and it's significant.
Especially on the feat turn. I don't know about this, so I'm very much with you on saying that I don't think that we are an especially support-heavy faction. Maybe a little more, and I agree that it could be just the fact that our beast stats in general suck ever since they got rid of Tenacity.
Yeah, Matt 6 across the board is sad, and 11-18 is nothing to write home about.
Rip, yeah. Tenacity.
Unless you're writing home to sort of, you know, say I'm about to die, and you know,
I've killed this one man, and now my heavy is about to die. Send a flower.
Yeah. You know, maybe with song requests for your own funeral. Like, other than that, not there. So yeah, support, we do need it to sort of buff ourselves up. But, I mean, every faction kind of needs some support. I mean, Crix maybe doesn't need quite so much. I don't know.
I think a lot of support in Crix comes from their casters, though, because a lot of them are debuff-focused. So, really, their support is their caster.
Yeah, but then you look at factions like Kador or Grimkin as well, and their base stats are just good, so you don't really need the support to make them better.
Yeah, but they still run a death knell, for example.
Oh yeah, sure, but the death knell provides benefits beyond just, like, say, an armor bonus. It gets in there, it's also doing entropic force, which makes it easier for everything else to kill.
Well, yeah, that's support, right? I mean, that's what it does. It provides it provides corpses, it provides entropic, and it provides armor. And that's their support piece. So I don't think it's unreasonable to say that Legion is on par with a lot of other factions, maybe towards the higher end of support.
Sure, I'd agree with that.
But in terms of how much is too much and how little is too little, I think a couple of things to bear in mind are the scenario. So right now, Mirage just came in. And so we need to think about solos. And we are in the privileged position of having access to the Shepherd and the Martyr, which just, you know, we can just spam out these 1-point solos, and that's very, very good for Legion. And Spellmasters are great. But if you think about, certainly, you mentioned Rias, and that's a really good one. Rias requires a lot of support because the whole thing is deliver Rias, and you need as much support as you can to do that. And also, Legion has a lot of crits. We have a lot of just random crits in different places, like Seraph and Rias and these different ones where you sort of, oh, wow, I just happened to roll a crit. If you've got, and obviously the Naga, we spoke earlier sort of off the show about Naga critting turtles and stuff like that.
Get that crit shadow bind every time. That's how you beat turtles.
And with the ice witches, suddenly that becomes a lot less pipe dreamy and more actually, you know, targeted.
40-ish% chance with a reroll? With a boost and a reroll, I think?
A little over, isn't it? A little over 40?
Might be that. It's closer to 50, somewhere between 40 and 50. I don't know. It's right in that area.
Yeah, which is not, you know, insignificant. How little is too little is if you can't score zones. So I think if you can't score the scenario, you've not got enough support, because in any case, you need to be able to at least pressure scenario, even if you're not planning to win by it.
Yeah.
So that would be my answer for how little is too little. It's when you can't score the scenario.
What's your definition of too much then?
Too much is, for example, Archangel plus Bloodseer. So when people try to make stuff that doesn't work by throwing in other models that can then make it better, you end up paying way too much for the privilege, and I don't think it works. That's at least my opinion. Or you see, for example, Veil 2 lists, and they really want to get that spell assassination. So, all right, let's throw in the Bloodseer for telemetry. Let's throw in the Ice Witches for the rerolls. Let's throw in the Seraph for the threat extension and for the flare. And suddenly you've got half your army of support, and you just lose attrition every time, and they put their caster behind something where you block the line of sight, and you're done.
Yeah, okay. I see where you're coming from.
That's an interesting way of looking at it. So what you're saying is, if you spend too much time and points trying to enable something that, if you had just spent the points on something that did work, and like a Nera for a Carny, you'd be better served.
That's a much better way. That's let's just edit me out and just put that in.
That won't be necessary. All right, cool. I think that's a pretty good answer to that question.
I agree.
Let's see. What else we got? So from Noximilium, an explanation of how support lets you maximize your work pieces. Coming from Kador, I'm used to my pieces being able to do their thing primarily on their own, rather than needing assistance to be really good at their thing. Or to be more precise, why do we take support rather than more work pieces, and how does it make a list better than just solely work pieces? So this is kind of building on our last question. We're like, we don't want to take too much, but we also don't want to take too little. But the support we do have kind of wants to be hyper-focused maybe on doing one thing or enabling one thing. Like the Seraph, we know he's 14 points and he's kind of pricey, but he offers a fair amount of utility between Slipstream, Flare, and Crit Poison. Like we said, we have random crit effects all over the place. And the Slipstream allows our slower heavies to kind of get in where they couldn't generally, because outside of the Seraph, we don't really have anything that speeds them up outside of, what, Veil 2 and Lilith 3 and Abby 2, I think? That's really the only speed buffs.
Yeah, that's about it. Thag's 2 feet for the extra attack, I think, if you want to count that.
Yeah, we can count that. Yeah, our beasts generally suffer from a inflated point cost from their abilities. Like their base abilities are what we're paying for. So we're always paying for Pathfinder. We're always paying for Eyeless Sight. And we're always paying for that Fury mechanic, where eventually our costs kind of just become pretty high. But, you know, there's reasons for it. Just unfortunately, we have to be able to use every aspect of the beast to really take full advantage of the points that we're paying.
Well, yeah. I mean, there's things to consider in all of these pieces, too. So, like you mentioned the Seraph, for example. The Seraph on his own threats 13 inches on any given turn. Mm-hmm. 15 if you use your caster to slipstream him. Like, he can randomly go and kill a heavy and threats farther than most of our other beasts with slipstream.
I wouldn't necessarily agree that a Seraph can kill a heavy.
I mean, you throw a strength buff on him, he's still POW 15, and a lot of times people aren't expecting him to go in and do something. Well, okay, maybe not a full health heavy, but like, I've had him randomly go kill casters before because they're on like two camp, and he just went, well, I guess I'm going to go 15 inches and spike dice now. It's like,
oh yeah, that's legit.
It's a thing that can happen.
Yeah, that's legit. That can happen.
Yeah, Cutter was mentioning last week how he got Abby 1 to put hyper aggression and just charged a Seraph at a caster and crit them to death, pretty much.
Yeah. Like, people don't expect things like that. But I guess onto like the rest of the question, we take support rather than more work pieces, and it makes the list better because of what the support adds. So you take like Ice Witches and Sorceress, not because they're necessarily going to do a lot of work, but because being able to throw out three Puppet Masters and get free charges is worth it across the list, is in addition to whatever else they're going to be doing. Like, that's just any given turn thing they can do. So if the choice is I can take 13-point Beast, which I don't think we have any.
No, offhand. We don't.
No. Yeah.
Okay, so if the option is you can take, like, a Nerf and a Shepherd versus Ice Witches and a Sorceress, like, most of the time in my mind, I go with the Ice Witches and the Sorceress because it adds some control elements to the list and it makes the things you already have in there better. So you don't necessarily need that other beast or that other piece to do work because the pieces you have got better at what they need to do.
It's funny. I mean, I'd take a different approach with answering that question, just coming at it from a different angle, really, which okay. is that he's speaking about Kador specifically, and like saying that his things can do things primarily on their own. And I would say that the Nerf is a really good example of our sort of one of our better value for points models, but it doesn't quite get it done without that little push. So Fury, Black Frost Shard.
Any kind of a strength buff.
It's got all the pieces. It's got that lovely, like, again, it's paying for all of its Legion versatility. It's got the sprint, the flight, the eyeless, the nice little animus, all that good stuff, but it doesn't quite have the raw stats. Kador is like the opposite. So if you're coming from Kador, I could imagine that playing Legion would be confusing because you're expecting all your stuff to just, you know, go on and do its own thing, and then you need your support to cover the versatility aspects, whereas we've got them all, and then we just need to cover the raw stats problem that we've got.
Right, so it's a difference of your pieces being able to just by themselves go and do work versus having all these extra bits like Beatback, like Sprint, like Flight, like Eyeless Sight, to ignore a lot of the things that would normally get in your way, but they don't necessarily have the accuracy or power when they get there without help.
Precisely. And then you look at Primal Terrors and it's the same thing. The reason why Animag is such a scary, scary list is because we've got all those pieces that weren't that great, and then suddenly we've got a caster that can give them +4 mat and +6 strength. Now they're good.
Yeah, love that mat buff. So good.
Yeah, Carnage is impressive, that's for sure.
Just casual mat 10, because why not?
Yeah. I mean, I love it when I just say, I've got mat more than you can deal with. Like, yeah. When they ask for numbers, it's just like, yeah, just more than you'd like me to say it is.
Yeah, it was funny talking to a couple of local people and we were discussing the list. And they were like, oh, it's not that scary. And I had to break it down by going, I can have a Warmonger charge a Jalam-feated Archidon behind a wall and hit it on anything but a 1. And there was a good 30-second pause when they went, well, I guess this is better than I thought.
Yeah, I've heard that response a few times.
Yeah.
So
it's a bit like I very rarely hear the word Hellmouth without some word before it.
Usually broken. That's the thing I've been hearing a lot of. Can't imagine where people are getting that idea. Hey, Larson!
Oh, God. Not again.
Hey, I called him out on episode 1. We're doing this now.
Every 10 episodes.
Yes. We're
mandated.
Come on here one of these days and like get him to try and we're going to go back and forth on Hellmouth. No. That's going to be the entire episode.
What we're going to do...
Which side are you taking of that argument? Are you trying to argue that they are or are not broken?
I am saying that the Hellmouth as it is fine.
That's a tricky position to take.
I will fight this one out. Let's do it.
All right, no.
If that show happens, just I'd like to be on again so that I can just side with Larson because they are nuts.
Okay, I'm actually interested in this discussion, even though it is a Legion-focused podcast and we're always going about how Legion is great, but I kind of want to hear you guys talk about the Hellmouth.
Okay. I mean,
what do you want to hear? It's amazing.
What makes the Hellmouth over the top for you, Simon?
Over the top. Okay, so in Primal Terrors, that's essentially where they become nuts. If you play them in sort of Ravens of War and you're actually paying 6 points for them, and they don't have an additional 2-inch advance to deployment, and they don't have access to +2/+4 armor buffs, then they are fine. They're absolutely fine. And I think that the change that they made to stop the tentacles going out of command was a great change that brought them in line. The problem isn't the Hellmouth model itself. It's the lists that it can be in, specifically Primal Terrors. So when a Hellmouth can deploy at 24 inches, and it essentially threatens 11.72, but let's call it 12 just to make it easy. So it threatens 36, which means that people basically can't move out of the deployment without moving into the range. And with the combination of Gallows and Hellmouth, you sort of deal with the main defense against it, which was previously the trigonometry defense. So putting two models base to base, side by side, looking directly at the Hellmouth, protects because neither one can be pulled. Well, then you Gallows one out the way and pull the other one, well, pull them both in and kill them. So you take away, or you can often take away, the first turn bonus. And currently the game is largely based around who wins the first player role. And so Animag is one of the very few lists that can go second powerfully because they don't get to run up the field. They don't get to take up all that space. They don't get to own the scenario because the Hellmouths are already owning it from turn zero. I'll maybe just let him jump in. I don't want to just rant. So maybe, you know, answer some of that maybe.
Okay, sure. Well, here's my thought. With the current scenario packet and the current terrain guidelines, there very often isn't two good places to hide Hellmouths. So the argument of, well, one of them is bad, two is worse, and that you can never get on scenario is generally just, in my experience, not true. They very rarely have places where they can set up at the 24-inch line and not get charged top of two and just get murdered as if they're nothing. I think the fact that in one theme force, they can be, I don't want to say over the top, they get to a point of being borderline, this probably isn't okay, I don't think is a problem in one list. I think the fact that you can give them +4 armor is very dependent on the caster you're taking and where you position them. And if you position them in such a way where you can get, like, say, the Blightbringer on both of them, you're limiting where the rest of your army can go because you can't go through them. You can't go over the top of them. So if somebody is crafty, they can use your own Hellmouths to block in where your army can go and where it can deploy and where it can successfully try and get charges on. Your list basically ends up jamming itself up then. So I think that's part of the issue. And then to look at two casters that have Gallows, say Fianna and Animag, which are probably the two bigger ones that people are looking at in Primal Terrors right now, the answer to that is still, yeah, you stay base to base. But it's also, you have to be aware of spell markers. Like, that's been a thing with Legion since Mark II. You have to know where they can go and where they can get to. At the end of the day, like, that's a 20-inch threat from a spell martyr. If it hits, if there's not terrain in the way that is going to stop a pull from happening, or if you can get the angle you need to actually pull something away. Like, a lot of beating the Hellmouth is just positioning.
Yeah.
And at the end of the day, the Hellmouth isn't there to actually pull anything in. Like, it shouldn't be doing that. If somebody is letting you pull things in, they're war machining wrong. At the end of the day, it's a 6-point unit that's there to say, hey, I don't auto lose on scenario 9 times out of 10 now because of things like Magnus 2, Haley 2, because of Cold Grimma Cloud Walls or Ashland Cloud Walls going, well, you don't get to charge anything and I get to spend 2 turns shooting up your things that don't have the sustained armor to survive a dedicated gun line.
Fair enough. Before I forget everything that you've just said, I'm trying to keep them all. I had counter arguments coming up and I was trying to keep them all in line, but I may have lost some. So if I forget something, do remind me. Okay. So a couple of things. Absolutely agree with a lot of what you've just said. So when you've got to put two Hellmouths in, you very rarely get two of them in those super sweet spots behind a forest or, you know, just tucked in behind a cloud or whatever. So what you generally get is one in that super sweet spot in the middle, and then one which is just saying, you never score this zone, over to one side. And the area in which you can cover two Hellmouth Maws with a Blightbringer is enormous now that the aura is six. So you're looking at almost a 17-inch line that you can draw between them if the Blightbringer's far up enough, which it usually isn't quite that far, but you know, that's a big area. So I wouldn't say that it blocks your army in. However, Primal Terrors is one of those where order of activation is a huge problem, and the number of models we have, especially medium-based ones, does get restrictive. And it's one of the reasons why I like running Golap in the list, because it cleans up the order of activations. It cleans up a lot of the mess that is created by the exact problem that you described. But when you said that something will charge the Hellmouth on two and kill it, I think if it does, I'm often delighted, because the only thing that can kill a Hellmouth when it's got plus four armor is going to be something much, much more valuable than the Hellmouth itself, which I then get for free. So that's the problem with Hellmouths. The problem with Hellmouths is that you are unable to kill them with anything that is the same or less value than the Hellmouth. In other words, you're always trading down into Hellmouths, and usually massively down. And while you're absolutely right that a Hellmouth should never be pulling something in on its own, the combination with Gallows has changed that a little bit, in that in order to stop every line, I mean, I think most people, including myself, run three Spell Martyrs. So in order to like stop three Spell Martyrs worth of Arknode lines that can pull your guy even a little bit so that the Hellmouth can pull the other one, is so clock consuming that I've won a lot of games with people simply trying to avoid Hellmouths. The amount of time that they waste on them and the amount of resources that they waste on them is too oppressive, in my opinion. Yeah, too oppressive.
See, I'm not entirely sure that I agree with you. I don't know that it's too oppressive. I think it's close to that line of this might be too much. Mm. But I mean, to get it to arm 22, you're either not putting your armor buff, if it's like Thags 2, if it's Fianna, if it's Animag, your Chosen or your Warmongers, which means they're going to start taking shots that they don't want to take. Or you're playing it with Thagrash 1 or Kallus 1, at which point it's arm 22 in melee. And I think that's an important thing to note. So if it's you're using an armor buff, it's only going to be one of the two of them. And if it's not, then they're going to be armor 20, which boosted shots over turns can still take down. I cannot count the number of times I've had a random charger spike damage and just go, well, I did four this turn. Next turn, I can put another three or four into it before it really does anything and take it off the table so it's not going to be in the way anymore. And as far as kind of, like I was saying, blocking your lanes and blocking your charges and everything else, that's as much the mouth as it is the tentacles. So if somebody takes out all three of your tentacles turn one, I generally find myself to be in a better position because of it, because it relieves a lot of that stress and that pressure of I need to get around this at this angle. The smartest thing I think I've ever seen was, like, this was in Toronto, yeah, a couple of weeks back when I was up there. I watched a game where Jeremy McClure was, I think he was playing against Dave Beauchamp, and he couldn't move his list because they ground into the middle and Dave just didn't kill the Hellmouths and went, no, because if I kill this, it lets your Blightbringer go through here. It lets your Warmongers go through here. It lets Chosen get through here. And as of now, this is stopping all of that from getting to me, and therefore it's fine where it is. And I think that's a little, as much as it hurts your opponent, if they're positioned poorly, it hurts you just as much.
That's a lot of what you just said is definitely true. So for example, having to put the Animag armor buff onto a Hellmouth is very much a choice. It's not just something you get for free. You know, you're definitely losing something for that. You're losing that it's not on the Chosen, generally speaking. And so you need to be deciding, look, are they trying to target my Hellmouth this turn, or are they trying to target my Chosen? And often the beauty of the Hellmouth is that we can choose to just sit behind the Hellmouths, because we don't have to do anything to take the scenario. We've got it before we've even deployed. And we can therefore just sit back, use the Hellmouth to sort of control what we want, stay behind them, and just threaten with gallows and all this other stuff to potentially pull them in. And eventually they need to commit something to kill it, and when they do, we kill that, and so on. But what you said is that it is certainly very valid. And regarding the idea of leaving a Hellmouth alive purposefully, I love that idea. That's fantastic. And if people did that more often in a very grindy game that really got involved, I think that's very cool.
I think that's part of the problem is, and I don't mean this to sound probably as negative as it's going to, is that there's been so much talk about it and how, oh, you need to kill these immediately because if you don't, it's going to drag heavies in. It's going to do this. It's going to do that. So that people make a priority out of, oh, I need to dedicate this heavy or a lot of these activations to killing it. When a lot of the time, if somebody positions it in a way where you have two of them maybe in a center zone or that are sitting at the 24-inch line, it's going to get in my way just as much as it is yours. And the difference is if I have to like waste an activation trying to get around it, then that's an activation I'm not spending doing damage. And that's something that I think a lot of people don't consider when they see it, because it's, I don't want to say tilting just immediately, but it's one of those things that's been so ingrained into the community at whole or at large that, oh, this thing is here. You need to kill it as soon as you can. That the consideration of, hey, if I just leave this thing here, like I'm already in its threat range, we've already ground into the middle, so it's not going to move me that far. It doesn't have the angles to move a piece, or it doesn't have a way to get this important thing out, I don't need to deal with it. If it's there, I can just grind this down until later. Once attrition has kind of worked itself out, I can deal with it then. And in the meantime, it's blocking charge lanes and it's blocking things on the Legion side just as much as it is for me. The difference is you still have to commit warmongers to try and do actual damage. You still have to commit war spears or chosen to try and do actual damage.
I think intelligently ignoring Hellmouths is probably the best answer to them, because there's no way to trade with them on equal value. That's why I think that they are over the line, and why you maybe think they're close to it, is because it's impossible, as far as I can tell, to trade with them well. And so, as you say, intelligently ignoring them is probably the best option, but I stress intelligently. And the problem with that is that it takes a lot of trigonometry, positioning, thinking about it, planning for it, and balancing all of that with the time it takes to do that, because you can't afford to clock yourself based on a free 6-point model.
Yeah, that's fair. This isn't just you, but as much as I want to say people as a whole say, oh yeah, because of gallows, it makes the Hellmouth harder. Like, so in Primal Terrors, there's how many medium bases? So it's difficult to get line of sight from your caster, as well as have them actually in range, which means you're going to have to go from a Spell Martyr, who chances are more likely than not is traveling around like the outside of the Ogryn mob. So like even the trigonometry there is you put two heavies base to base, basically from where the Spell Martyr has to come from, or like that area, and you've basically stopped it being able to do anything. Mm. What this really comes down to then is you get one heavy that's in like an optimal position to do something the next turn, and one that has to be almost directly behind it or like off to an angle a little bit. And that like stops all of that shenanigans like right there. In addition to the fact that Spell Martyrs are still 12-12. So like even incidental blast damage can kill one, and that kind of kills that plan.
Oh, I mean, incidental blast damage will kill one. There's no doubt about that. But the thing is that if you are trying to use trigonometry to block the Spell Martyr angle, and again, they can run 10 Pathfinder wherever they want.
Yeah, so it's a 20-inch threat from that.
Tricky.
It's not easy, yeah, but it can be done. And then it's just doing it while staying out of the 11 and 0.8 whatever that the Hellmouth can potentially get you in.
Yeah, so you've got to... Okay, so you're suggesting that if you're staying out of 12, then you just... Right, okay, I misunderstood. I thought you were saying that you could go into the Hellmouth's range and block the gallows, and that's what is really hard.
It's... You stay out of the Hellmouth range, and then you position to block the gallows, and, like, 12 is that magic number for a lot of heavies to be able to threat.
Yeah, yeah.
So, like, the Hellmouth can't get you, but you're going to be able to get it.
If you can kill it, and if you don't trade down horribly, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, there's obviously trade-offs to doing it, but like that's a thing that, like, because of the type of people I play against is what they've started doing to me, and it's made me reevaluate how I look at them. That's probably not going to be the same for everybody. because not everybody is floating around in a friggin' shark tank with WTC players everywhere, but
sure.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe that's why I look at it the way I do, I guess.
It's absolutely fair. I would say, I think the way I come at it is from the edge of Hellmouths have won me most of my games. And and I guess like I run them in both of my lists. And if I could, I'd put more in. Like they're just insane.
Let me gather my thoughts for a second, because I want to talk about why I think the Hellmouth is actually, I think you're both right in that the Hellmouth is kind of equal parts powerful and equal parts okay, where you're right in saying that when we were paying 6 points for it and we don't have the Blightbringer in the list and we don't have an armor buff and we don't have incidental bonuses towards it, it's a reasonable price or a reasonable effect. And I think what it used to do back before themes was you were paying 6 points to kind of offset the point cost of our beasts. But when we take it in a list that isn't focused on beasts, it's focused on really surprisingly efficient infantry now that the Wargmongers are 13 points for a max unit, and the fact that they're free in that same list, the effect that it has in Primal Terrors is way bigger than anything we ever got out of it before.
Plus 2-inch deploy, yeah.
So I think that's kind of... I don't want to see it get touched again, personally. I think if they were to do anything else to it, then I think that would hurt Legion, especially if they don't make any other changes simultaneously.
They could knock the armor down 1 point. I don't think that would take them out of the game.
Yeah, it's possible that's what they could do, but I actually enjoyed that debate quite a bit, so thank you for indulging me.
I mean, I will talk about Hellmouths all day. Hellmouths are my favorite model in the whole of Legion, and I own quite a lot of the faction, and Hellmouths are without a doubt my favorite thing in Legion, and the frustration that they cause opponents and the amount of tricks that you can do with them and the experience gap. So the amount of experience you need to play into Hellmouths is massive, and the advantage that you can get from having experience of playing Hellmouths yourself is massive. And I love elements of the game that reward experience. I love that feeling that you have invested some time into something and you get to reap the benefit.
That sounds fair to me. Wolf had to take off, but what we're going to do is we are nearing the hour mark. Is there anything that you wanted to promote or anything that you've got coming up, Simon, before we sign off for the evening?
Promoting. I'm going to go to Klagenfurt, which is in South Austria. And just to say that they're a lovely bunch of guys, great little club. And it's a team tournament with a lot of the Austrian WTC and Slovenian WTC and all these sort of teams coming down, and one team from Czech Republic as well. So just a little shout out to them, really. So thanks for hosting the tournament, guys. And I look forward to seeing them all next week.
Awesome. Well, thank you, Simon, for joining us on the show. And thank you, Wolf. I didn't forget you this time, at least, buddy. So,
Yay.
Hey, welcome back. We're just going to close, so I'm just going to say our goodbyes. Actually, now that you're back, do you have anything you want to mention before we sign off, Wolf?
Two things, actually.
All right.
There is a Canadian WTC fundraiser. It is on the 25th of September, I believe. That sounds okay. Right. Yeah, I'll double check the date. August 25th. There we go. If you're in Southern Ontario area, they're not doing like their entire WTC team. They're splitting up each guy into a different team. It's to help get them to WTC. I believe I'm taking a team up of a couple of the guys down from Ithaca, and Swampy, I think, is coming with. So there's going to be us up there as well. If you're in the area, you know, help them out, spend a little bit of money on raffles and stuff. They're all mostly nice guys. I mean, some of them are excessively polite, but it's fine. Oh, aggressively polite. There we go. That was the wording. Something like that. Other than that, Bocor Brawl is happening in, that's in October or November. I know they still have teams available for that. So if you're in the Jersey area down that way, sign up for that. Again, I'll be there. I don't know if it's worth it coming just to see me, but you have the chance to come and kick the shit out of me, which has got to be worth something. So, you know, maybe do it just for that. That sounds like a fun time.
Excellent. Sounds great. As always, join us on the Discord. We have the best community on the War Machine and Hordes Discord. We're pretty active at all times of the day, so come have a nice chat about Legion.
It's true.
What else
we debate? Hellmouths a lot.
We do. Stay out of general. Just Full stop.
Before general. It is literally cancer.
Oh, yeah. Step one, mute general. Step two, join Legion.
There you go. Yeah, that'll do it for our show this week. Thank you very much, Simon, for joining us. Thank you, Wolf, for always being here, even when I don't mention you at the top of the show.
It's all right. I know where I stand now. I'm just not as important. You'd remember me if I was a special guest.
All right, well, that'll do it for episode 11 of Blightbringers. Thank you for listening.
Thanks for listening. Bye, everybody.
Bye-bye.